Thanks to Curex for its longtime support of Another Mother Runner. Whether it's running, hiking, biking, court sports, golf, or even working, Curex insoles can help you live a healthy and active lifestyle. For 15% off, visit Curex.com and use code AMR15. This episode is sponsored by Thorne Supplements to help promote and maintain your health goals. Go to thorne.fit/runner and use code RUNNER for 10% off your first order. Remember to use code RUNNER at checkout. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Run the Rose City by doing the Portland Marathon presented by OHSU Health. Both the marathon and the half marathon feature several crossings of Portland's iconic bridges, and both bridges have a downtown start and finish. Use code AMR20 for $20 off registration at portlandmarathon.com. In this conversation with a registered dietitian, the topic of disordered eating is discussed. Please take care when listening. Welcome to Another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen-Shea. I'm joined by Liz Waterstrat. Hello, Liz.
Hi, Sarah.
There you are in a suburb of Chicago in early March, and you're wearing short sleeves. How is that possible? My house is so flipping cold, and I'm wearing a wool tank top and a sweater.
Sarah, it is just the phase of life I am in where it's always summer and drinking a cup of coffee every morning puts me into full-blown sweats.
Oh my gosh.
So I will sit here often at my desk working in the morning, drinking coffee with my t-shirt, not off because I wear headphones when I work. So it just ends up like bunched up around my neck, almost like a t-shirt scarf. And I'm in my jog bra. And this is how greatness happens. This is how I work these days.
It's a look and you're going with it.
It's also something I feel like many of the listeners can relate to.
Oh, goodness. All right. Well, lucky you. You can wear t-shirts even in wintertime. So, Liz, I am lamenting a situation. So last week was my birthday and I had primed the pump for my kids away at college to mail me birthday cards. I texted them. I told my husband, Jack, to reaffirm it with the kids, like that I really wanted birthday cards from them. So then my younger daughter, Daphne, got COVID about 10 days before my birthday. So she got a pass because she was not leaving her dorm room. So I was like, okay, I get it. You know, you can draw me something when you get home. She's really into drawing and she's a great, great artist. So then my son at school across the country, he texted me before I even got up on my birthday. And so he was, you know, happy birthday, mom. I love you so much. I hope my card arrived in the mail. And I was like, "Way, there's a card coming." So no card on the day of my birthday. And so then, but then he called me that evening and he was like, "Oh, so did my card arrive?" I said, "No, you know," I said, "you definitely mailed it, right? Like I want to manage my expectations here." He's like, "Oh, I totally did. I mailed it a long time ago, back in February when the days were in the teens." And my birthday's March 4th. So I was like, "Oh, that would be plenty of time to get across the country." And then I paused and I said, "John, did you put a stamp on the envelope?" He was silent, absolutely silent. And then he goes, "No, what's going to happen to the card?" Because, Liz, I had to give him instructions. He has written me once from college. I had to take a photo of an envelope, like address, and point to be like, "Okay, this is where you put your return address. This is what your return address is. Here's how you put the entire address," you know, that type of thing. And so, oh my gosh, I just knew. I was like, "Oh." So I said, "John, did you have the return address label on it?" He said, "Yeah." I was like, "Okay." I said, "I think eventually the card will find its way back to you." The kicker, he goes, "Oh, well, I lost the key to my mailbox, so I can't get into my mail."
Goodness. Oh, see, all this technology, Sarah, yet we are overlooking the basics like postal mail.
I mean,
with
come
these
on.
Kids.
I mean, Daphne, his twin sister, had said to me before she got sick, "Mom, I don't know how to mail a letter."
Okay, so this is funny because I sit on some different organizations and involved in their important meetings. And in one of these organizations, we sent a very important notice on a very expensive project out to all of the community members. And one of them was claiming we did not and was surprised by the bill. Mm-hmm. And when we explained to them that we sent it via email, we sent it via postal mail, they told us the generation that they're in and said, "We don't go to the mailbox." And I thought, wow. So I just everyone be aware, there's an entire generation out there that is very befuddled by postal mail service, the idea of going to a mailbox, putting a stamp on an envelope.
I mean, so because I bought him, like I went to the post office with him in New Jersey when we dropped him off, in part because he had to update his passport. So that's where we were going to. But I'm like, oh, as long as we're here, I'm going to buy you, you know, a little book of 10 stamps. And I got him note cards at a bookstore in the town. And I'm like, really, I really would like some notes from you. And the one he wrote me back in the fall was so sweet. It's still sitting on my desk. And then the kicker is, not only has he, you know, there's no stamp on this, we don't know where it is, he said, "Oh, Mom, and I wrote a really long letter in it." I'm like, aww. No.
Well, it will make its way back to someone before your next birthday. And perhaps a lesson in lowering the bar here, and next birthday, just say, "All I want is an email. I want mail, but we're going to meet in the middle. Just email, not a text, because texts are so like short,
right?
You know, but an email, they have to sit down, write some more words."
And so then yesterday I was out walking my dog and ran into a mail carrier. So I was like, "Hey, what happens when you go pick up mail and it doesn't have a stamp on it? You send it back to the return address, right?" He's like, and he could give me no answer. I said, "What is the protocol? Like when you got hired, what did they tell you to do when you emptied out, you know, the big mailbox, the public mailbox?" Oh, there's no response. Like none.
I'm sure there is absolutely no protocol for this, Sarah. It's probably a complete gamble. Maybe it just disappears.
I said, "Do you just throw it out?" He was like, "Well, I don't think we throw it out."
But like, we don't.
Oh, do you burn
send
it?
Send it back. Right.
But then I think about, you know, that so my address, my home address is on our website as the, my home address is the headquarter address of another mother runner. And so when I would sometimes get return packages to us that I had to pay postage on. So people had returned something to our store, mm-hmm. and put $3.75 on there and it really needed $4.25. And there would be my mail carrier being like, "Yeah, you owe me 50 cents.
Oh yeah. Like 10 cents.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've gotten that too. Yeah. So what do you do? Like, do you tape nickels and dimes to your mailbox? What are you supposed to do?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've done that. I've put it in a used envelope and taped it to my mailbox. But then also I've sent things that didn't have enough postage on them and they get returned to me. I'm like, what is it about Portland? They'll like let things through and let the recipient pay the fee. Ugh, it's just infuriating. So I tell you, though, knowing that letter is out there is just eating away at my gut, because I just treasure the written word.
Mm-hmm. Your son is in school in Washington, right?
No, his sister's at school in Seattle, Washington. He is in New Jersey. He's in Montclair, New Jersey.
I was going to play let's guess the game of where that letter is. And I mean, Portland to Washington is not very exciting, but Portland to New Jersey, who knows where that letter is?
Stop it. I can then see the entire country in my mind and like look for a little heat map, or, you know, instead of find my friend, it's find my birthday card with a handwritten letter inside of it.
I wonder if there's some sort of like heat map of where letters received at the Portland whatever zip code postal mm-hmm. office, and then which major city does it go to next, and mm-hmm. how does it get there? Does it mm-hmm. is it on a plane? Is it on a train? Is it on a car? I feel like this could be the next AMR program. Not just go the distance, but while you're going the distance, find Sarah's lost mail. Right.
Oh my gosh. Gosh, I love it. I love it. We need to get the whole Another Mother Runner community on this case.
It's a mystery. It's like where the Carmen Sandiego. Do you remember that
yes,
show?
Yes.
Where in the world is Sarah Bone Shay's mail?
Oh my gosh. Liz, well, I like your idea of having the entire community be on the lookout for that important letter for me. All right. Well, our topic today is how to optimize your energy balance to ensure you're fueling your workouts well enough. We think it's important year-round, but particularly as people are heading into their spring training season. Our guest is Becca McConville, MS, a registered dietitian and a sports dietitian based near Kansas City. Becca is an expert in REDS, which stands for Relative Energy Deficit in Sports. Don't worry, she'll explain. and the author of Finding Your Sweet Spot, How to Avoid REDS, Relative Energy Deficit in Sport, by Optimizing Your Energy Balance. A longtime runner and basketball player, Becca is also the mother of a teenage daughter. So thanks for joining us, Becca.
My pleasure. Excited to chat.
So Becca, I understand you have a background in running and basketball. Will you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah. I always joke that I absolutely hated to run when I was in sport playing basketball. I was the one that would try to find the shortcuts to cut through. And then as soon as I was not told I had to do it, then I started to enjoy it. So it was kind of funny how that happens. And especially as a woman and a mother, it just becomes our escape, right? That time to have some quiet and solitude and me and the dog go out and hit the trails. And now it's something that I really love and want to do until I'm in my 90s or even beyond.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about your professional background?
So my professional background is, as she spoke to, a sports dietitian. But like many athletes, I kind of waited later into my career to go, what I eat could actually impact my performance. And it wasn't until I was playing basketball in college that I got curious around that and could actually see the benefit, but also kind of towed the line of maybe being a little too obsessive over it and trying to get more additional training in, and myself have a lived experience around REDS, which is what led me to this passion in this area to inform more providers and help many athletes avoid it altogether.
Mm-hmm. So as I promised in the intro, Becca, please define REDS for us. And how long has this term been recognized?
Oh, great question. So formally, it was known as the triad. And even the triad has not been around for that long. It wasn't until 2015 that the International Olympic Committee expanded it to red. So I like to keep things kind of in terms of money. So when we think about relative energy deficiency in sport, I like to call it deficit. So it's where there is not enough deposits coming in for the withdrawals. And I think a lot of times for our athletes and runners, we think about, okay, if I'm going out to train for this long, this is how much energy I might be expending. But we forget about the demands for our brain. Our brain can sometimes use 25 to 30% of our daily energy, especially when we're stressed or if Wow. we have a lot on the to-do list. Digestion, our immune system, like this time of year when we're fighting off all these flus and colds and viruses, that requires more. And so we see this subtle mismatch. It doesn't have to be extreme. I think a lot of times people will say, well, but I'm still eating. It just takes 250 to 400 calorie discrepancy between what you're taking in versus what's being expended to slowly start seeing dysfunction.
Mm. Wow. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. So tell us, how did you become passionate about working with athletes to identify and treat REDS?
I think from my own lived experience, and all of us are an athlete in some way, whether it's managing your household or maybe, you know, it's so funny. Once you get above 30, you're considered a master's athlete, but maybe it's even wanting to still compete once you get past your 30s. And I love just that competitive nature. And the human body really is so resilient and brilliant. And when we treat it kindly, it's amazing the things that it can do.
Mm, I love that. So then who is at risk for developing this condition? I mean, you said that it's that so little that 250 to 400 calories can tilt the balance. So can quote unquote regular or middle of the pack gals experience an energy deficit? And how would a female runner or athlete know if she's undernourished?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. To me, they're probably even more at risk because unlike a college athlete that may have an athletic trainer and a physician that's and a dietitian that's working with them, you know, they're out doing their training program, they're running their kids to practices, they're trying to do things at the house. And so there's so many buckets that are requiring energy given and energy that needs to be put back in. So they tend to get overlooked. And so a lot of times too, there's a lack of awareness as to what they need. And I don't necessarily encourage all my runners or athletes to count their calories, but I do think it's helpful, just like we would with our bank statement. We wouldn't try to guess how much we need to pay our bills. We would probably have that pretty accurate. And we would want to make sure that we have a little bit extra in the bank just in case. So what was the second part of the question? I'm sorry.
No. How can a female runner or athlete know if she's undernourished?
Right. So I always say do a head-to-toe scan. So all those organ systems in our body require energy, like I just spoke to the brain. So if we start to notice maybe our sleep quality is going down or we wake up and we're feeling less rested, that could be a sign. If our digestion, we're starting to notice more issues with bloating, gas, not going to the bathroom as regularly as we used to. These are all signs that the body is trying to either A, slow down function to conserve energy, or B, it can't keep up with the capacity. Like digestive enzymes require energy too. So there's a lot of things that get missed even in like a primary care office that we wouldn't think about. Reds, luckily, you and I have a mutual friend, Laurel Short, who's phenomenal. It's nice to have providers that have that sports-informed background.
So then, I mean, should someone walk into their primary care physician and say, hey, I think there might be something going on? Like, I just think, you know, it takes some knowledge. It also takes wanting to find out if there's a problem.
Exactly. So I would never want to overstep a provider. They're obviously a very important part of care, but you do want to have somebody that is REDS informed. That's actually what's led me to create a certification course. So that way people can start to seek that out and look for that in providers. But they can always start with a registered dietitian who's a sports dietitian, because that's a big part of our credential for the CSSD, is being able to identify and assess REDS. And since it goes to estimating what their energy needs are and what they're taking in, that's a good start. Then they can say like, hey, I suspect maybe you need to get some blood work done. Or if they've had a lot of injuries, we might want to send them to a sports provider for like a DEXA scan for bone density or maybe some further testing.
Are there some red flags when you have someone who comes to you with different blood work or markers? Are there things even you as a dietitian look out for, assuming they've already had a conversation with their provider? Are there things we could all be on the lookout for in our blood work?
Yeah, so I call it the domino cascade. It's kind of like a pulley system. If the body is starting to have to work harder, that actually means that sometimes it has to use more nutrients like iron, for example. Our thyroid hormone production will start to go up. And then if there's not energy to replace it, then we actually start to see hypothyroidism that results from underfueling. So I look for their iron panel and their ferritin levels. And ferritin is that storage form of iron. Their vitamin D, and then their thyroid, and then specifically T3. Dr. Nikki Key is a sports endocrinologist that really speaks to that, that you can kind of watch for trends if you've had that lab ordered before, and that will be a good indicator if your body is starting to get into an underfueled state.
Hmm. And then let's say someone is in this underfueled state. You've talked about some of the different symptoms and markers, but what are some of the body system health consequences of being in this state, you know, some of the more downstream effects?
Mm-hmm. Well, so if we go back to the original term triad, that was amenorrhea, so the loss of menstrual cycle for over 3 months consecutively. And that starts to then have implications for our bone health because estrogen is such a strong driver of bone density and bone remodeling. The other piece of this too is heart health. Estrogen is a vasodilator for our blood vessels. So it helps keep those blood vessels nice and flexible and from not forming plaque. There's a really neat cardiologist named Krishanda Schufelt, who is actually looking at women in the before perimenopausal stage that have had amenorrhea and then their risk of heart disease when they've been amenorrhea for greater than 6 months. So those are probably the two ones that we look at with probably the most severe risk. Then we start looking at some of the other functions like digestion. There's a big overlap with REDS and IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, when people mm-hmm. are diagnosed, when a lot of times if they can get proper fueling, and it becomes the chicken or the egg, if they're having issues going to the bathroom or they're having distress, it's hard to say, hey, eat more. So we really have to work on the gut health first, and then we start trying to implement better strategies. The other piece can be our brain. So sometimes we see heightened anxiety, especially if they're low carbohydrate availability, which means that they're not consuming consistent carbohydrates. Those end up creating our serotonin backbone and melatonin backbone that helps us with sleep and helps us have a calmer brain as well.
Fascinating. All right, it's time for a short break. Stay with us for more on staying properly fueled and healthy. Thanks to Curex for its continued support. For 15% off Curex insoles, visit Curex.com and use code AMR15. You know when you find an indispensable product and you suddenly want one for every room in your house? Dare I admit I'm that way about cheater glasses for reading? Well, Curex insoles are the athletic shoe equivalent. With Curex's patented dynamic arch technology, Curex insoles properly support the foot and its natural movement for ideal ankle, knee, and hip alignment. This means the kinetic chain up from feet to head functions like it should, helping me sidestep injury. That's why I have Curex Run Pro insoles in my running shoes, Curex Bike Pro insoles in my cycling shoes, and the all-new Curex Pickleball Pro insoles in my court shoes. I don't take an athletic step unless I'm supported by Curex insoles. They provide flexible support with an ideal level of rigidity. The list of sport-specific insoles Curex makes is long. In addition to the three I just mentioned, Curex makes insoles for hiking, walking, soccer, golf, tennis, hockey, skiing, and more, plus one specific for work shoes for on-your-feet-all-day occupations. Curex offers a full line of highly customized insoles available in high, medium, and low arch profiles. Feel the Curex difference and try Curex risk-free today. The company offers a 60-day warranty, even if the product has been cut to fit your shoes. Visit Curex.com and use code AMR15 for 15% off a pair of Curex insoles. That's Curex.com with code AMR15 for 15% off. Curex.com and that code AMR15.
Being in control of my health means being super mindful of what I put into my body. From food to supplements, I'm always trying to find the best option out there, which is why I'm so excited to tell you all about Thorne. Thorne takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness. Thorne teams up with leading medical professionals to bring you highly effective nutritional supplements. Thorne manufactures all of their supplements in the U.S. using top-notch ingredients sourced globally. Whether it's their B-complex, creatine, magnesium citrate, or basic prenatal, Thorne's got all the supplements needed to help promote and maintain health goals. And really important to me as a coach and athlete, Thorne is trusted by over 5 million customers, 47,000 healthcare pros, many pro athletes, over 100 pro sports teams, and multiple U.S. national teams. I enjoyed the benefits of Thorne's vitamin D and magnesium for years. Both are key components of being a healthy athlete and human for energy, recovery, and general health. I appreciate Thorne's commitment to high-quality ingredients, and I'm at ease knowing what's on the label is all I get in their trusted products. Give your body what it really needs with Thorne. Go to Thorne.fit/runner and use code runner for 10% off your first order. That's Thorne.fit/runner with code runner for 10% off your first order. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Again, Thorne.fit/runner with code runner for 10% off your first order.
Thanks to Portland Marathon for supporting our show for a third year in a row. It's only March, but it's time to plan your fall race calendar. come out to my fair city, Portland, the Rose City, to take part in the Portland Marathon presented by OHSU Health. It offers both a marathon and half marathon happening this year on Sunday, October 6. The courses of both the full and half marathon are fast, beautiful, and a fantastic way to experience the Rose City. Since the city is bisected by the Willamette River, both the full and the half marathon have numerous bridge crossings, yet the maximum course elevation is a mere 178 feet. The downtown start and finish area for both courses is just 36 feet above sea level. Ah, all that oxygen. Let's talk weather for a sec. Historical temperature averages for race day are a low of 50 and a high of 67 degrees. Historical chance of precipitation on race day? It's roughly 25%, although that's typically very early in the season for us to get wet weather here. And I gotta mention, another mother runner will be at the Portland Marathon Expo. Come to the motherland for another mother runner. Join us in the Rose City. Register today at portlandmarathon.com and use code AMR20 for $20 off registration. Again, go to portlandmarathon.com and use code AMR20 for $20 off registration. portlandmarathon.com, that code AMR20 for $20 off registration.
So in addition to decreasing your risk of injury, are there other health or wellness or even mental benefits that women can appreciate when they finally meet their energy needs?
Oh gosh, yeah. I would say, what's the downside of being fed, right? We know our energy is going to be better. We typically have better sleep habits. The other piece of this is, you know, the more consecutive planned training, the better off our performance is going to be. You know, there's studies that have looked at that when you're constantly dealing with niggles, or if you're not able to progress in training as planned, then that usually means we have a lack of endurance capacity and there's not much kick at the end. So when they're well-fueled and they're doing their, you know, pre, during nutrition and recovery nutrition, then they get to see the benefits in that performance and continue to do what they love.
Mm. So Becca, I work with many athletes, many busy female athletes, and I find that one of the biggest issues is not just underfueling, but that it's very unintentional. Mm-hmm. And they just don't understand how much they need to meet their energy needs. So if an athlete is struggling with this, where can they go for that information to figure out what exactly are their energy needs so they don't end up in a state of unintentional deficiency?
Absolutely. I would like to say there's a great place on Google, but there really isn't. I think if they can get on Instagram and find, again, sports dietitians or even some of our physiologists that are Reds informed, you'll start to see better graphs and charts. But I think, you know, it doesn't have to be that you're doing an ongoing follow up with the dietitian. I have athletes all the time that come to me that's like, hey, I'm getting ready to enter into this training block. I just want to know what to expect. And so not only do I help them assess where they're at currently, but I also guide them on what to expect as they move forward in their training plan, like where they would need to increase their nutrition, what that would look like. So they have a game plan just like they would for their training. They're matching the nutrition with that.
Do you find women tend to struggle with meeting their energy needs psychologically as well? So let's say a woman has been underfueling, whether or not she intends to or not, that sometimes it's more than just the understanding of their energy needs. It's learning to be more psychologically comfortable with this idea of taking in more than they feel like they need, or seeing the numbers change on the scale.
Oh yeah. Welcome to our culture, right? I mean, as women, we're inundated with messaging around what to eat, what not to eat, where our body should be, where our hormones should be. And so when you hit that intersection, it's really confusing to figure out which category you land on. And then when you can't find accurate sources, you're kind of left to guessing, which is never good. So again, that's where I always say, like, I challenge my athletes to answer that question. What do I know to be true? So if they have all of a sudden maybe cut back on carbohydrates because they heard that that wasn't good for them, or they're fearful around weight gain, and then they're fatiguing on their long runs, and then the next day they feel horrible and they can't keep up with the to-do list that they need to do because they were doing their long training the day before, and they have a comparison point of another time that they possibly did fuel better and had more carbohydrates, then they know that to not be true for them. Like lowering their carbohydrates did not work for them. So I had them do a lot of experimentation for themselves and challenging again, what's that downside of being fueled? And then also dissecting the science. I'm really big on helping them go like, here's the literature that speaks specifically to the sport that you're in, the age group, demographic, and then here's kind of what our culture tends to tell us.
Yeah. And can you speak to why maybe not, you know, not weighing yourself every day is a good strategy, especially if you're in a period of heavier training or training for long events, why the numbers on the scale might not be the best indicator of whether you're healthy or you're on track?
So I like to kind of use an analogy that everybody will kind of chuckle, even if we're long out of school. If we get a 99 on a test, what is usually your very first response?
Fell short, didn't get 100.
Exactly. So that's how our brain works, even when we're stepping on a scale, right? If our culture is continually said, like the goal is either maintain or continued force that we need to lose weight, even if we acknowledge like, hey, I'm running so many miles a week, I'm lifting, so I know I'm building muscle, I know that my weight's going to be influenced, that I'm increasing glycogen, it's just hard to approach that with neutrality. So I think it's better to kind of put the scale aside, look at recovery markers. So I try to teach that as well. Like, okay, what is, if we're going to use some heart rate data, what's your heart rate data telling you? How is your RPE in your training? Well, then it sounds to me like our nutrition's working and whatever weight it is, that's where you need to be your healthiest.
You are speaking my love language with heart rate there and glycogen. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. So I want to ask that this question actually of both of you, Liz, since you work with so many athletes in your coaching practice and Becca, you in your dietitian practice, I mean, could you kind of give some real world comments that you remember of people who had been underfueling, undernourished, and then the changes they felt when they started eating as much as their body needed? You know, somebody who had to drop out of a race or, you know, come in, I don't know, you know, way in the back when they expected to be kind of up more toward the front, that sort of thing. I think some people might suspect that they're in this situation, but they can't quite believe that there are actual benefits to fueling more.
Sure. I can speak to this with one of my athletes. She is a self-confessed former diet culture, kind of obsessed with, you know, being skinny and doing a lot of cardio. And this year she just made the decision that she was going to turn it around. She works with a dietitian, and the difference in her mood, first of all, her mood and her reaction to her training is incredible. It's totally night and day. And just her ability to back her training up day after day has been remarkable, which then means she's seeing more results from her training and she's enjoying the training more. So it's really a remarkable difference when an athlete commits to it. It's not easy. It's not easy, but when they finally commit, it makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I have one that actually, the weight and the body comp kind of backfired on her. She had a gym that had one of those in-body scans. And so she was very number-driven, had lost a significant amount of weight and had a great running coach, physical therapist that caught like, I know you're telling me that you're fearful of regaining the weight, but I think you're underfueled and this is why you haven't been able to do the activity. So she was a kind of later life athlete. Once she started to implement some health changes, she then was like, hey, I think my body's capable of great things. So she would have these scans all the time and they actually had diagnosed her with going through menopause. So as she started to work with me, she gets on this call one day and she's like, you're not going to believe it, but I actually had a period. And now I'm wondering if possibly the reason why they said I was menopausal was I was actually amenorrheic. And wow. So she started to get cycles back. She had less injuries. Well, she finished the Goofy Challenge. So where they do is it 5K, 10K? Mm-hmm. No, excuse me, 10K half full marathon. And she was sharing the story how at the end she was like doing her gels and passing people and still had energy. Well, she decided to get a scan and the scan actually, the numbers did not go in the direction she wanted to, but she was able to acknowledge, like, gosh, look at the awesome things my body has done. It didn't fall apart. And now I've actually got my cycle back, which is better for my bone health. So she's like, I don't care what those numbers are. This is where I need to be. And so, of course, that's where you smirk. And she's like, I know you're going to say, I told you so. But I was like, nope, you said it for me.
Wow. So, and you alluded to that about, you know, that so that she thought maybe she was going through menopause. Do you feel that there is an age that, you know, red seems more predominant? I mean, I think a lot of us know that it affects collegiate athletes who are in programs. You know, you read like Lauren Fleshman's book and just think how rampant it is on the college campuses. But do you feel that once people are past their mid-20s, is there kind of a age range where they're more likely to develop this? Is this something that like, okay, phew, I made it to 50 and I didn't have it, so now I don't have to worry anymore?
So from an energy demand standpoint, obviously like an adolescent and then a woman that's pregnant or postpartum, those two groups would have the highest energy demands. But from a situational and pressure standpoint, actually that postmenopausal woman is a group, is a huge group that gets overlooked because they don't have some of those telltale signs that we look for, reds. And then you think about some of the pressures that they face where they're like, avoid weight gain, make sure that you cut your carbohydrates. And so they tend to get overlooked. So they may have less grist from an energy demand standpoint, but I think because of the pressures that's faced, it all depends on the situations that they're in that time period.
So on your Instagram account, you used a term that really resonated with us, and that was the road to resilience. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, trying to change the narrative where I think sometimes we're grasping at straws for that quick fix. And so that's where they're susceptible to fad diets, or if, again, let's be real, that whole lighter is leaner. So if I can try to push my body to this place, then maybe I'll be able to have this one great race, where if they can continue to build resiliency in their body, that they can do the training, they can still navigate day to day. I want them to be able to go home and have energy to interact with their loved ones and the things that they're passionate about. Then they will continue to be able to do the work, and whatever challenge that they want to set, they're able to do that day after day, year after year. Or as a lot of, I know the coaches will say, they kind of stack those workouts and training. We want that body to be able to do that by building it from the foundation up.
Okay, Becca. So also on your Instagram account, you show the difference between taking a pathological approach versus a positive approach to food and movement. And pathological approach, I was like, huh, what does that mean? So can you talk us through a few of those differences and also why they matter?
So that was taken off of Jessica Setnik and the term orthorexia, which orthorexia is basically an unhealthy obsession around the health benefits of food. So we'll see that where, okay, I'm eating for performance. And I can actually kind of share a pretty cool scenario where I had a professional basketball player that, I mean, to a T, she got up same time, had the same thing for breakfast. Like, you can kind of envision what that looks like. We had the salad. And then she commented to me one time and she acknowledged that she had reds from doing her own research. She goes, it's so frustrating. I have these teammates that, and she played overseas. She goes, you know, they'll go out to the pub and they'll get up the next day and they play the most minutes. They have the most points. They play together amazingly. And we talked about how, you know, the enjoyment piece and not focusing on what you're taking out, but what you're adding in is just as important. And so that's where that division between positive nutrition and pathological, that it's not just about nourishment and nutrients. It's also about what that's doing for your mental health and the enjoyment pieces.
So true. Can you talk a little bit about the building blocks of energy intake and why you are not a believer in matching your energy intake to expenditure?
Oh, thank you. I love this topic. So, because you can't really do randomized controlled trials in our athletic population, but the military can. So I've been a devout reader of looking at how they study time periods of lack of energy or low energy availability. And so when we think about our day-to-day, if you go out and you have a big, maybe you have Saturday and Sunday have back-to-back tough training and workouts, you're going to get home. you're going to be tired, or you might be getting in the car to go to the next thing. Maybe it's a kid's soccer game or something like that. It's really hard if you have a day that you're expending 3, maybe 5,000 calories, depending on what they're doing, to get that in that day. But if we have Monday, that tends to be a recovery day or rest day, and Tuesday is a little bit lighter, and we can try to either make sure we keep our energy stable across 7 days or match it to our hunger, it's a lot more feasible. And we don't have studies that look at, if we have an energy deficit greater than 5 days, we usually see dysfunction. But if we can keep that deficit and minimize it to only a couple days, there are not detriment or dysfunction as well. And most of my athletes have found it a lot more doable to take that approach.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
You saying that then really, I think we really need to reemphasize this, that you're saying an energy deficit after just 5 days, and then going back to you saying, you know, it can be the difference between just 250 to 400 calories that make up a deficit. I just think it's really a much more finer needle that we're trying to thread here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it could be the holidays, right? When people start to, life gets really chaotic and they're still trying to keep up with their training. Or maybe I see this a lot with my younger athletes, where they maybe switch out their afternoon snack, or maybe their schedule gets off and they start missing that snack. We start to see luteinizing hormone pulsivity. So that's what leads to that trigger of our menstrual cycle. We see leptin that's secreted from our body fat will start to alter. And so it doesn't take a whole lot, and it doesn't take a whole lot of days to just kind of start. And that's why I call it the domino cascade. That's like the one domino. And if you keep going, then it just keeps going and going.
All right. You talked about snacks. Let's get a little brass tacky here, because gals in our community are always looking for quick and easy pre-workout fueling options. What would you recommend? Like, what are some of your favorites?
Ooh, see, right now I'm all about the energy balls. I made a big batch, which is oddly with grape nut flakes. I love to make mine with that sometimes instead of oats. Again, any bar that has a balance of carb and protein. You've always got like snack size yogurt parfaits. I had an athlete this morning that was informing me of all the great snacks at Quick Trip. So you can even hit off the trail. And she was telling me they have a cheese pack that she really loves to get. But once you find something that works for you, I want variety and flexibility throughout the rest of the day. But I think that's really helpful, because it ensures you're going to get in enough nutrition, and it also works for your digestive tract and training your gut as well.
Mm. So you're saying if you find something that works, don't worry about being your go-to every time.
Right.
Okay. And how about post-workout fueling? Again, folks are always looking for new suggestions and guidance.
So depending on how they respond, I have a lot of athletes that tend to lose their appetite. So we actually, or especially as it's starting to get warmer, they may want to go with a smoothie that gets the liquids in. It can kind of cool their core temperature. We can get a lot of phytonutrients in it for recovery. But if they don't have the luxury of that, then they can always kind of get a ready to drink. I like them trying to get, I say, half an hour to repower, get in something small, let their body start to recover and get some energy back, and then follow up with like either a small meal or snack about an hour and a half later. Personally, for some reason, I like the saltiness of like those cheese packs. And so I kind of make up one of those that have some nuts, dried fruit, cheese, or again, being able to go with a nice bar as well.
A little charcuterie plate, it sounds like.
There you go.
Girl, it doesn't have to be pretty, you know? Just,
whatever, yeah,
yeah, exactly. Girl dinner, yeah.
Oh, goodness. What advice would you give to an athlete who thinks she may be experiencing red S? Specific resources she might be able to look up to improve her fueling?
Right. Well, okay. Shameless plug. She can always read my book. But even starting with that, like take pen to paper if they feel comfortable. You do a couple weekday, a weekend. Also taking a look at what they're taking in intrafueling. I just had somebody the other day that what she thought she was taking in, when we actually slowed it down and broke it down per hour, we realized that she was not hitting the carbohydrate grams per hour or her sodium as well. And then looking at her expenditure. Another, I think, kind of slippery slope that people forget is our activities of daily living. So how much are you moving around during the day? Are you dismissing carrying laundry up and down the steps when you're all these activities are, again, withdrawals. And so we have to make sure that we're getting deposits in that. And then again, if they don't feel comfortable with that, or they feel like they're still unsure, finding that sports dietitian that they can come in for assessment. And again, just let them know, like, hey, I don't know that I need continual ongoing care, but is there any way you can help me make sure I'm getting my needs met?
Mm-hmm. And how can folks go about finding that registered dietitian or sports dietitian like you who specializes in REDS? And also, it seems to me that if they could find also a mental health professional who can specialize in that.
Yes, thank you for saying that. So for the dietitians, we have a credential called the CSSD, which is Certified Sports Specialist Dietitian. And then maybe just even a couple of questions, like how do you typically approach REDS with your athletes and how do you treat that? And then that will kind of give them some informed care information. And then when it comes to mental therapist, I would look for a sports psychologist because they're going to understand a little bit about the demand of sport and how sometimes that confusing messaging can be. Because you didn't ask me to get on this soapbox, but I'll do it for 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes what we're seeing is an entanglement of REDS when it's truly an eating disorder. And not that the diagnosis matters, but the way we approach care and follow-up is, and we owe it to that athlete and the athlete owes it to themselves to make sure that they're getting proactive care if it truly is an eating disorder.
Mm. So to be clear, REDS is not considered then an eating disorder?
Correct. It's simply the state of that energy deficit. So it can occur in an eating disorder, out of an eating disorder, like unintentional. But I struggle when I see a lot of this on social media or news articles where athletes are speaking about having kind of these repeated bouts of REDS. And I'm like, once somebody has that information and in knowledge, bodily awareness, what this feels like, we shouldn't see it repeatedly. There is probably, you know, that diet culture, fear, anxiety, disconnectedness, trauma, many things that sometimes interfere with our ability to have what we call interceptive awareness. And that would typically meet the diagnosis of an eating disorder. And that's where sometimes having that initial visit with a mental health provider, they can screen for that and be able to say like, hey, I think it might be helpful if you came in and we had some more periodic check-ins.
Mm-hmm. So just to really be super clear about this, that, that REDS is, as you said, kind of a one-time thing that kind of once you have figured that out and you can stay on top of it, but that to have multiple incidents where it seems like you're having the same sort of symptoms or offshoots and, you know, bad mood and all that stuff, that it's symptomatic of something larger and more insidious.
It can be. And I should clarify on that. People can have repeated bouts of REDS. But I think we need to look at the underlying reason, because I it just takes me back years ago in the office where I had somebody that was coming to see me for REDS. And then it was about the third or fourth session. And I said, you know, you're sharing a lot of your history with me. And I think there's something more there. And she goes, you're the first person that's ever called that out when I have been in and out of doctors since I was 16. She had about 6 different stress fractures that had occurred. And she knew there was something more than just not understanding what she needed from an energy standpoint. Mm-hmm. The other piece of this too is if I have given somebody a goal of increasing their nutrition and they struggle to do it, then there's something more driving the bus. Because most athletes, if you say, hey, you need to do this to be able to get out and go train and compete the way you want to, they're going to take the ball and run with it. Mm-hmm. If anxiety is getting in there, or if there's so much fear or entanglement, again, around that diet culture, then that's when we're dealing with something a little bit bigger.
Okay, well, this has been really enlightening, Becca. Thanks to you for joining us. And thanks also to our shared friend, Laurel, for suggesting this.
Yeah. I think
it's just a really important thing for people to be aware of. And thanks for shedding a lot of light on it.
Well, thank you for having me on. My pleasure.
Liz, I suspect you see a lot of all the types of eating issues, fueling issues that Becca was just talking about.
So many. And like I alluded to, it's very often not intentional. It's just either not understanding or there's just something else, like Becca said, there's just something else in the way, whether it's anxiety, depression, or some other type of trauma. So I think the more we get the message out there and have this conversation, the better off we will all be as women and athletes.
I definitely think that's the case. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you, Liz, for being a part of the conversation. Not to be flip, but we have new merchandise in our store. We just restocked. I went to pick a bunch of stuff up yesterday from the printers. We have all sizes now in our Relentless Forward Motion and shirt, which is super cute. Liz, you could wear both of them in your house. They're short sleeve.
Also make great scarves.
Right. And the other one is our Badass Mother Runner shirt. Always a popular shirt. I got a bunch of those. So those are both in stock in our store, which you can find at anothermotherrunner.com. And you click on the store link in the top. Again, go to anothermotherrunner.com. Our podcast today was produced in St. Paul, Minnesota by Barry Medor from Fire on the Bluff.
Hello.
Liz, were you having issues?
I have a lot of issues.
Yes, with sound.
I just didn't hear anyone. And I looked over, my internet is still on because I can see it here. I just wondered where everyone went. I heard some of it. Everything went quiet. But there was a bright light. Everything went quiet.
Walk away from the light, Carol Ann. I also loved your little hello. I thought someone had like jumped, somehow gotten into our rivers. I'm like, who is this child who's suddenly in our face?
I don't want to upset Barry.